Good morning. My name is Travis Tate. I'm chief of the Criticality, Shielding, and Risk Assessment Branch in the Division of Spent Fuel Management, Office of Nuclear Material Safety and Safeguards. We appreciate your interest in the session on the graded approach for spent fuel storage and look forward to your participation today. At the start here, I want to take just a moment to acknowledge our session coordinator, Hallie Lindsay, for putting this together. And also, I'd like to acknowledge our room monitors who will be collecting the Q&A cards, Diane Garvin and Charity Portello. Just a few quick items here. For safety and security, we ask that you would keep your personal belongings with you. Don't line them up around the side of the walls. And just to be mindful of the exits in the room. If there's a need to exit, we have the Montgomery County Police as well as the hotel staff will direct us to where we would need to go. We ask you to kindly silence your electronic devices while the session is in progress. And if you need to leave the room during the session, please do so quietly. And also at the end of the session, we ask if you could just kindly exit the room so it can be prepared for the next session. And just a reminder that all sessions are being recorded and recordings will be available on the RIC website. So for our Q&A portion of the sessions, we're going to ask that the questions be held until each of the panelists have finished their presentations. Our room monitors will be going down the aisles with cards to collect cards. If you need to, if you would prefer to ask a question by writing it down on a card, you can give it to the room monitors. And we also have mics in the center aisle. If you would step to the mic and wait to be acknowledged, you can ask your question from the mic as well. And then just a final thing here, just reminders of the app. I'm sure everyone has heard about the app by now. And just reminder that you can use the app to check in for this session and as well as to provide a rating for this session. In addition, you can rate the conference as well. We appreciate that feedback. And so with that, I will get started by introducing our first panelist. Is Mr. Don Shaw. Don has spent 19 years with Constellation Energy, assigned to positions involving Part 50 licensing, Part 50 relicensing, system engineering, and maintenance. More recently, Don has spent 13 years with Orano as TN America's licensing manager. Thank you, Don, for being here.
Thank you, Travis. Good morning, everyone. What I intend to discuss this morning is a brief history of the graded approach pilot licensing action, the current status of and lessons learned from that pilot, and then TN America's thoughts on what's next for graded approach. In the summer of 2016, the NRC, NEI, and the industry began workshops to address regulatory issue protocol item RIRP I-1601. RIRP items are items where the NRC and NEI and the industry rank certain items for a focused resolution, schedule and spend necessary resources, and document and institutionalize results. That RIRP became known as the graded approach to Part 72 licensing. The main idea was that licenses and certificates of compliance, CFCs, and their associated tech specs had grown to contain too much information, and through risk considerations, that information level could be reduced. That extraneous information was and is a distraction to licensees and NRC reviewers, distracting from the information that is truly key to public health and safety, Removing it will remove that distraction and further enhance public health and safety. Through several workshops and multiple letters between NEI and NRC, selection criteria were developed and agreed upon for evaluating what should and what should not be in the licenses or CFCs, the tech specs, and the UFSAR, or none of these. TN Americas agreed to submit a CFC amendment licensing action to pilot the process. The workshops had tried to make the selection criteria as clear and objective as possible. I was a part of all of that. Whether or not we succeeded is debatable, in my opinion, and a key lesson learned. For example, for approved contents, we had C1, basically anything from 72 to 36 alpha, which is totally objective, C2, verification items for subcriticality, confinement, and shielding, which is fairly objective, and C3, shown here, a characteristic or parameter which operating experience or risk considerations have been shown to be significant to ensure public health and safety. Sounds like a legitimate selection criterion, and it is, but it seems to be kind of a catch-all, if you will, and deciding whether license or CFC conditions or tech specs clearly fit this or not was not necessarily easy and involved judgment and opinion. We had three LCO criteria, and L3 read pretty much identical to C3 here and was also fairly subjective and therefore also involved judgment and opinion. Our selection criteria also involved three risk-oriented questions, which had words and phrases like significant increase in the probability or consequences of an accident and significant reduction in the margin of safety. These are somewhat subjective and therefore involve judgment and opinion. We didn't expect the process to be totally cookbook, but we felt that it was perhaps not as cookbook as originally desired. Obviously, the more subjective, the more likely the NRC and the licensee may not agree. Related to this point, the pilot review is ongoing, but from the pilot results to date, where 99 total items were assessed, and 13 of those 99 items TN felt could go out of the CFC or tech specs, and NRC felt they should stay, and one of the 99 TN felt should stay, and NRC felt it should go. There is one item of the 99 involving fuel qualification tables which remains unresolved. Again, TN feels this is a key pilot license, a key lesson learned from the pilot thus far, that the more subjective selection criteria were not easy to implement, and to the degree that can be further developed toward objectivity, the better and more efficient will be the process. Other pilot results and lessons learned are as follows for your general information. 19 of the 99 items assessed will come out of the CFC or tech specs. Several redundant items were identified for removal. That is good because it removes clutter and removes confusion factors. Several items were recharacterized but remained in the CFC or tech specs. LCOs became admin items became LCOs, things of that nature. That is good because a good scrub to properly characterize these items adds to clear understanding and review efficiency. A number of items were split and greatly reduced. These were items where maybe 5 to 10% is safety significant, with the other 90 to 95% just adding necessary but not safety significant information that better belongs in the UFSAR. So that's a brief history of the graded approach pilot licensing action, the current status, and some lessons learned. So where does TN Americas think graded approach is going from here? TN feels that the landscape is ripe for harvesting the benefits of risk assessments, but there are a couple challenges. Why is the landscape ripe? Future submittals, TNs at least, will be more and more content-heavy and content-specific with only small design changes, so designs are stabilizing. Also, calculational methods are getting more robust and comprehensive, and consequently, margins are increasing. Plus, NRC and the industry now have a tremendous amount of licensing action review experience and operating ISFSI experience. Those stabilizing designs, that increased margin, and that review and operational operating experience should allow focused assessment on license and CFC conditions and technical specifications and identification of those characteristics that are adequately risk-informed and that they are significant to the health and safety of the public and have no other means of verification. TN feels that both considerations here apply to criticality and confinement, since consequences are very high and they are not generally verified beyond the design and fuel loading phases. But for shielding, which is also one of the three key safety functions in the regulations, TN does not feel that both considerations apply. Dose, and therefore verification of the shielding function, is constantly measured as the LR program is carried out continually through fuel loading operations, transfer operations, and initial storage operations to verify no anomalies, then continues during ongoing storage operations as part of the overall site dose considerations. The licensed CFC and tech specs should reflect these realities, heavy on criticality and confinement, not so heavy on shielding. What are the challenges? First, amendment timing considerations. Our amendments normally support one or more general licensee fuel loading campaigns. The timing very often is tight, and sometimes NRC project managers are keeping CFC holders and key general licensee personnel directly updated as the reviews proceed. If an amendment pushes the risk envelope, which would be commendable in the spirit of what we're discussing here today, the review timing likely will go up, and the campaign timing could be impacted. So it seems that realistically, inroads in the graded approach risk considerations area must be made outside of actual licensing actions. The difficulty there is that to really know if a risk-informed change will get approved, seemingly a real licensing action is needed, like the ongoing graded approach pilot. As much as we might thoroughly vet a change in a public workshop, since no regulatory decisions or commitments can be made there, there's no real way of knowing if the vetted change will get approved. So what do we do? A process similar to NRC's Consolidated Line Item Improvement Process, CLIP, whose purpose is to streamline the license amendment review process and involves the Technical Specification Task Force, TSDF, will likely be needed. Maybe that very process can simply be directed to Part 72 items, or maybe a parallel process is needed. I'm aware of CLIP and TSDF, but I was never directly involved, and I don't know their current status. That brings up a second challenge. Is that realistic, practically speaking? A CLIP-TSDF approach would require dedicated resources who otherwise would be spending their days submitting real licensing actions or reviewing them. Can we get the commitment, particularly from CFC holders competing for business, to carry this out? Can we get resources currently dealing with the alligators to help drain the swamp? That's a second challenge. So my conclusions are, graded approach risk assessment promotes focusing on the safety significant aspects of dry fuel storage and enhances assurance of public health and safety. It's a good thing to do. The graded approach pilot is yielding good lessons learned as we finish it and we move forward. The environment is ripe for further bringing graded approach risk assessment into dry fuel storage licensing actions. Very likely, advances will need to occur outside of normal licensing actions via a separate process like CLIP and TSDF. This will take dedicated effort and resources separate from the current ongoing caseload. Who will be all in? I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Don. Our next presenter is Stefan Anton. Dr. Anton is the Vice President of Engineering for Holtec International. In this role, he is responsible for providing technical and licensing leadership to all Holtec technical services departments engaged in design and analysis function. Dr. Anton has over 25 years of experience working in the nuclear industry in the U.S. and Germany, with a primary focus on spent fuel storage and transportation. Welcome, Stefan.
Good morning, everybody. Following Don's presentation, I go a little bit more into some of the technical details after talking about the graded approach in general. About the technical details, the technical challenges that we actually face when we further go into implementing the a graded approach. So that's my main focus. And for those who know me, they know that I have a strong technical background. So that's really the area where I'm usually most comfortable in. That's my overview. First, I'll talk a little bit about the graded approach, how we view it. It's probably just a repetition of what people have already said, and then I go into the devil is in the detail. I go into the various issues a little bit more. Don has already touched on a couple of them, and I want to have a couple of more comments on this, and hopefully that will in the end help us design a path, a way forward, how we can actually implement this, because after looking at the principle, which is very, very logical, the difficulty is really to put this into place and put this into reality. So advantages of a graded approach, of course, there's nothing unusual on this slide, but I thought I'll just summarize it again in just a couple of bullets. For a given amount of resources, and we all have to just always deal with a given amount of resources, safety is maximized by focusing on the most safety significant aspects. This is kind of, I know it's motherhood and apple pie, but it's important to keep that in mind. The graded approach helps with this, and so that we focus on safety. So the graded approach in the end is about increasing safety, not about reducing safety. And I might say that because sometimes I feel that if we talk to people on the outside, I get kind of a feeling from them, oh, well, you're doing that to reduce your workload or something like this. This is not the case. I mean, we want to improve safety in the end. But the devil is in the detail. So there are various problems that we need to address. What is the right measure of the safety significance? We all can say, yeah, we have to look at the most safety significant things, but what is the right measure there so that we can compare things? How does it go across disciplines? Don already mentioned on this. This will be an important problem that we have to address in the end. What processes should we use? And in the end, how do we document all of these kind of things? So first, a couple of comments, and I hope you can see that. Yeah, I think it's still doable there. What's the right measure for the safety significance of things? Of course, very often people say, well, it's the safety margin. The larger your safety margin is, the better the situation is. So you would look at the things with a smaller safety margin. And that sounds very easy, but in reality, it's not really that simple because you can easily come up with very incorrect conclusions there. Difficulties lie, for example, in the fact that the limits that we have in the regulatory limits, they're very often, specifically in the dry storage area, already have a substantial amount of margin included in there. And on the other hand, the calculations that we do, they are already very conservative. So very often, if we look at the calculated margin of an analysis, it's not really a real measure for the actual margin that we have compared to any real physical limit. And I've given just one of the examples in there. Again, you may know that I'm involved in criticality analysis. Typically, the criticality analysis that we do, they have a limit. The limit is the maximum reactivity of 0.95, and our calculations that we do, they very often they end up with a maximum calculated value of 0.945. So if you look at this, you may think there's really very, very small margin. You're very, very close to any limit in there. But that's just because the limit has already margin in there, and the calculation is very conservative. If you would look at the reality, and I did that just below that, your limit is really 1.0 and for criticality, and your actual reactivity might be well below 0.9. So your actual margin is is larger than 10% in reactivity, so it's about two orders of magnitude larger than what you would see from the calculations. Both of these numbers, they have their value in whatever you look at, but it's important that you know what kind of margin you look at. If you take margin as a measure of the relevance of the safety significance of a specific issue. So that's the conclusion. There are different types of margins. You need to know what you're looking at if you actually consider the margin in some of this. The next question is other disciplines, and again, following Don, he already mentioned this. The question is a 10% margin, and even if you get the right measure of the margin, is a 10% margin in reactivity more than a 10% margin in peak cladding temperature? It will be difficult to find a very objective answer, but we have to come up with something so that we can actually make a decision in the end. Maybe that needs to go to some degree in looking at the consequences of any reductions in margin. Process. This is, again, unfortunately, a little bit of a busy slide, but from my perspective, this is pretty important. Because specifically in the very detailed analysis, it's important that in the safety evaluation, at some point in time, you have to make a decision to say, we do not need to go any further in any details in the analysis. So it's recognized that a further detailed evaluation would result in a very small change in the margin or in the confidence or uncertainty in that margin. So that it's so small that it has no consequence anymore on the safety significance or on the safety thing. But the question is, where is that point? I think that is very often the discussion specifically between us and the NRC and the reviewers. Where is this point? We probably don't disagree from a technical perspective, but we do often or sometimes disagree of where is the point where you don't have to look at things any further. So it probably needs, in the context of the graded approach, there's a need to identify some kind of a process to come up so that we agree when do we not want to go any further on this. Unfortunately, that's the last bullet in there. There's a little bit of a chicken and egg problem there, because very often, as I said in my earlier bullets there, if it doesn't make any difference anymore to go any further, then don't do it. But how do you know that it doesn't make any difference? So very often we do analysis, a lot of analysis, just to show that they don't matter. That is also not very efficient, and it's a challenge to get around this. Documentation, that's probably not quite so important from a technical perspective, but if we in the end develop, or when we in the end develop appropriate approaches there for the graded approach, from a technical perspective, there will be a lot of, we have to make sure that all of this is documented appropriately so that it can actually be used going forward. Wouldn't start with NRC documents, but there will be all kind of other documents and work products that go in there. I mentioned here there isn't any NEI white paper that we will be working on to outline the principal approaches. In our licensing application, we might take the opportunity to actually have additional technical evaluation that actually help with informing this approach. There's a possibility to do so-called PERTs, PIRTs. I haven't been involved in the past in those for burn-up credit. So this is it's quite a time-consuming process, but in the end, you get out of this what you want to see. How important are specific issues? Topical reports, and then in the end, hopefully some kind of NRC document that wraps this all together. Now, you might look at that and say, well, there's a lot of work. Well, there is a lot of work to be done, but there's a lot of work to be done, and before we even can get any benefits out of this. So, and this is something where I don't think that this is the correct view. All of these things, they are work in progress, and from our perspective as a CASC designer and applicant for license applications, we can, as we go through the processes, I believe that we can already get benefits from a step-by-step improvements in this entire process. So it's not something where we have to wait until the end. So in 3 years, we have developed the plan for the graded approach, and then we can use it. It is, as the pilot already shows, it is something where I believe that the industry, the NRC and the industry, can benefit from each individual step that we're taking in there. So from my perspective, that's important to keep that in mind, that this is that it can be beneficial, from my perspective, immediately. So in summary, again, the goal is to simplify the licensing while improve safety. There is a lot of work that needs to be done. We need to define what it actually is, how we go about it. And after looking at all these challenges and listing all of these kind of things, I don't have a negative outlook on this. I mean, the positive outlook from my perspective is that the technical, there's an enormous amount of technical work that has been already done on all these kind of things. This is not necessarily a case of adding another enormous amount of technical work. It is pretty much just a re-look at the things and to see what's important, what is not important. So I believe that the amount of technical work is pretty limited in this. And that's encouraging, so it's just a different view, look at the things that we already had from a different perspective will allow us to a lot of gains in that area. And at the same time, as I already said, we think that in the ongoing applications that we have, in the ongoing discussions with the NRC, if all the insights from the developing graded approach go in there, I think there will be a feedback forwards and backwards, and that will give a benefit on this on both sides. And that's the end of my presentation. Thank you very much.
So our next speaker is Rod McCollum. Rod has been working on regulatory issues at NEI since 1998. He has 30 years of nuclear engineering, licensing, management, and regulatory policy experience. Currently at NEI, he leads industry efforts to reduce business risks associated with used fuel management, commercial nuclear power plant decommissioning, and emergent material degradation issues by directing broad-scope technical and regulatory programs. He held prior positions in government with the Department of Energy and industry at 3 commercial nuclear power plants. He has a Bachelor of Science degree in nuclear engineering from the University of Cincinnati and a Master of Business Administration from Lewis University. Welcome, Rod.
Thank you, Travis. It's always an honor to be able to speak here at the REC, and I thank the NRC for recognizing the importance of the work that folks like Stefan and Don are doing to establish a graded approach to dry storage. It is an important thing. I did have an ominous thing happen to me on the way here. I was merging onto the freeway, and all of a sudden, on the radio came the REM song, "Don't Go Back to Rockville." And I thought, whoa, there's another exit right ahead. I could just get off. But I'm here anyway. What encouraged me to stay on the freeway and come here was that, I remembered NRC unveiling its app where we all got to do live polling on the first day of the RIC. And there was a question about what is the biggest challenge facing NRC, and the number one was, to the use of risk information. Number three was spent fuel management and decommissioning. So you have come here to the intersection of the number one and the number three biggest challenges that NRC faces. So who wouldn't want to be here? And again, I am very glad to be here to talk about this important topic. on the risk thing, Commissioner Caputo was asked about, what does it mean to risk informed? You better use risk information. And she didn't try to claim she had all the answers. She said, well, I have to equivocate. You know, we talk about it at a high level. And I think we in dry storage have been, we've kind of been the poster child for that. I mean, we've loaded 3,000, sometime early this year, we loaded the 3,000th cask somewhere. Some of these have been in service for 30 years. We have a tremendous safety record. We're learning a lot. The high burn-up demo's telling us we have a lot of margin. We're getting in and we're inspecting casks. We're learning about margin we have in a lot of areas. I'll talk about those. But we have trouble articulating. We have trouble turning it into real actionable regulatory stuff we can do to be more efficient. Again, the work Don and Stefan is doing is important. So how NEI supports this, these are the four things we do at NEI. Has anybody who's been paying attention here at the RIC not seen this slide in another NEI presentation? Okay, well, you need to go to more NEI presentations. But, these are the four things we do. Preserve, that's the market reforms, creating a level economic playing field for the clean air and reliability benefits of nuclear energy. Sustain, that's where we talk about reducing regulatory burden. That's where we talk about things like a graded approach and risk informing. And I think Margie Doan really set the tone for the whole conference when she referred to Marie Kondo, who I only know as someone my wife says I should watch, but I never do, in terms of the decluttering. Sustain is where we declutter the nuclear industry, get rid of those things that are unnecessary, that make us non-competitive. So we can do the things that give us joy, which is innovate and thrive. You know, we can bring new reactors and new concepts to the market. When you talk about the real safety impacts, the most safety significant thing about this industry is clean air energy and reliable energy. If you don't have those two things, the world becomes kind of unsafe. So, we're trying to declutter so that we can do the things that bring us joy, innovate and sustain. Chairman Svinicki also said at the beginning, it's in how we do this, it's not as much the why, but the how. It's what serves us best, what serves us now. So here's what we have been doing. The how we've been trying to tackle this problem. We've got all this experience, this tremendous safety record. I know John Kessler sitting in the audience. We did PRAs many years ago, and he did one of them that said, the risks of dry cask storage are somewhere in the 10 to the negative 12th, 10 to the negative 14th. And then we decided, we better focus on the 10 to the minus 12th because those are really important. But we've got the graded approach that you've heard about. We had some major improvements with the change control guidance that NEI proposed and the aging management guidance, 1204 and 1403. Those are on the path to endorsement. NRC proposed consolidating that unwieldy collection of ISPs into one new reg, and they also put forth a lot of information on what we learned to high burn up fuel. So in terms of the how we've been trying to get it, we've made a lot of progress, but I would tell you that it is just a start. And I think getting to Commissioner Caputo's angst, a lot of, and I know Stefan talked about it a lot, performance margin is important. What is it, how much margin do you have, and what is it that can compromise that margin and what doesn't, and understanding that. I think that's a part of the answer that I think this year we are focusing on getting to build on the things we have accomplished and accomplish more. Now, this is a figure that has become very controversial, and I will promise you here today that this is the penultimate time I will show this figure in public. I will show it one more time, but by that I mean, we have a lot of performance margin in dry storage. We know that. Our experience tells that. The fact that these are static systems and inert environments, what we know about everything from corrosion science to criticality to thermal, the high burn-up demo. So we've got, the red line that says that's where real safety exists. We don't want to go over that line. And then we establish safety limits or criteria arbitrarily way below that. We're not quite sure how far below that, but we know we're way below that. And then we have the things that Stefan and Don talk about when they're in licensing proceedings with NRC. Our models show this and our models show that. So we've got these things that are way below the safety limits, that are way below safety, that we spend a lot of time on. And then, of course, we've got reality. The high burn-up demo taught us that. The casts are much cooler than we thought they were. And as we go in and do inspections in between the overpacks and the canisters, we find the radiation levels are a lot less than we thought they were. Well, that what this means is the people who put this whole fabric of regulations together were really smart. You know, we got something that's really safe here. But if we spend a lot of time in that little tiny bubble, which doesn't really matter, we're diverting attention away from things that are really important to safety. And you really can't afford to do that in today's world. Now, as I say, I'm hoping to phase this figure out because it has been called by some of my colleagues in the NRC a cartoon, and I have been reminded NRC does not regulate by cartoon. I cannot show these notional, intuitive things and not put some meat on these bones and expect that to change the regulations. I get that. So what we're hoping to get to is something more like this, and this is starting to pay dividends on the reactor side. Now, the reactors, obviously, I think if you look at, well, here's a dry cast storage, here's a reactor. What's the higher risk? Well, in this area, they have started to actually identify and quantify and act upon their margin. So this figure is a little bit, you know, there's real new regs and analysis behind this. So this is something that I'd like to be a little more like this, although I'm not recommending we do more PRAs on dry cast storage. That I think we've learned as much as we can from that. So taking that, you know, getting back to, again, Commissioner Caputo's angst is this to me is where performance margin comes in, and this to me is what the graded approach. And this is a figure that Doug True, NEI CNO, drew up. And you know, I was struggling with this. It's great when your boss, you know, finally crystallizes something that you've been thinking about but couldn't get to, therefore proving why he's your boss. But you know, I mean, and just coincidentally, Doug introduced this, and he's been using it. You know, we've got a mature industry. Check that box. We've got a lot of learning, and we're getting more every day from things like the high burn-up demo. We've got strong performance. You know, the safety of dry cast storage is universal. You know, when we have things that aren't what they should be, they don't have consequences because we have so much margin. And, you know, we understand we have safety margin, but that's not the same as understanding of safety margin. So this is where we want to focus our efforts going forward, is understanding this margin. We can do that, we can create off-ramps. And this is what the graded approach means. You know, think, okay, we're not even going to worry about this because it can't challenge our margin. You know, it means 1 degree against, it means at most 1 degree against 100 degrees of margin. You know, we're going to implement graded, reasonable, high assurance standards. Dry cast storage COC should not be more detailed than reactor tech specs. They still are. Don and Stefan are making a lot of headway at getting us out of that box. But I think when we have a better understanding of margin, we can get all the way out of that box. We shouldn't be in that box. And implement performance-based inspection. Inspection is important. You know, licensing, when you're churning in licensing space, it's almost like you're not recognizing that a lot of the things that go under licensee purview that shouldn't be in licensing space, those things do get inspected. And you know, inspections do find things. We've got a couple things going on at San Onofre right now, a couple enforcement actions that I will not talk about because they're still under review. But I think the whole industry should pay attention to that. Pay attention to the outcomes. Learn from that. I don't think we'll find that anything I've said about the safety is compromised, but we will find out something about accountability and our need. You know, we're arguing here under the graded approach. Put more information under licensee control. That puts a responsibility on the licensee, and that puts a responsibility on NRC to assure that the licensee has the programs to live up to that. But then again, having to license in safety on the front end is very inefficient. So here is how I propose we get to a graded approach. And yes, that is a road grader in the upper right-hand corner. You know, we have margin in four areas: thermal margin, radiological margin, confinement margin. You know, what we're learning about the canisters and degradation mechanisms, criticality margin. So we're going to try, and we're going to write this year an NEI white paper, and Bob Quinn is here in the audience. He's volunteered to chair an NEI team. If your company should be on this team, if you're an NEI member company that should be part of this and you're not, let Bob know and let me know, because we need participation here. We need the smart people. We're not in the NEI white paper going to define all the margin. We're going to define the roadmap of how we organize all this information. These phenomenon identification and ranking tables, I actually learned what PERT meant after struggling several times. You know, we'll use those to sort it out, and then you'll see things from the vendors and from EPRI, topical reports, that will actually define the margin. You remember that figure I showed you on the reactor? They actually have real stuff that tells them what their margin is, and then how they can take real regulatory actions based on that. You know, so then we will get to a graded approach. So what we will not be doing is spinning our wheels in the mud on things that aren't important to safety. That's what you do if you don't have a road grader, because you're just driving in the mud. You haven't built a road. Now, it's interesting here that when I went on Google to, and Google's a dangerous thing, to search for images of a road grader to illustrate the graded approach, I found a lot of videos, and I was going to insert one of those videos in here. But they are all too long, and I don't know how to cut a video, and I don't really know how to insert one in a PowerPoint. But one of the things, in watching a couple of those videos, I was impressed with, the people in the road grader business have a really strong safety culture. You know, the way they described how you safely operate these things was impressive. And I think, you know, we have a really strong safety culture, and we'll continue to do so. But, we really need to pave the road here. We really need to stop spinning our wheels in the mud. So here's what Bob and his team and NEI are going to do this year. And, you know, it's interesting. In the REM song, Don't Go Back to Rockville, that I heard when I got on the freeway, you hear that refrain, don't go back to Rockville, don't go back to Rockville. You know what the line right after that is? And waste another year. Well, you know, we're not going to waste this year. I mean, we made a lot of progress last year. So this is a one-year schedule, and everybody in the industry has told me that this schedule is too slow to get us to the NEI roadmap, and then we won't ever be done, because I think we can, you know, every time you pave a road, a pothole comes up and you have to pave it again, and sometimes you add lanes and all that. But we'll get the roadmap together this year or sooner. We're going to work on the white paper. We're going to have a public meeting next month at some point to talk more specifically about how is NRC going to reflect its agreement? We find when we write NEI guidance that the path to endorsement is a long and winding road sometimes. You know, this white paper is just laying out the roadmap for how we're going to define margin. And, you know, we ought to come up with a real common sense, easy to do way to show that NRC and NEI are in agreement. And that's, you know, by the end of this year and by the time in January when NMSS does their next briefing at the commission on their business line, we hope to be a closure for that. And, we hope we will be able to give the industry more tools to reach that. So, you know, we're going to establish a risk-important graded approach. And the most important thing here is the reason is to improve safety, because the more you're not spinning your wheels on things not important to safety, the more you are focusing your resources on things that are important to safety, not just in dry cast storage, but across the industry. You know, if NRC doesn't have such complex COCs to review and each of the vendors is up to, like, you know, double-digit amendments on their most popular systems, every slight change requires an amendment. And I will say, you know, there was some discussion in Don's talk about the fuel qualification tables. There's been statements from NRC, and some of them are on the record, that, yeah, the fuel qualification table should not be in the COC. You know, if you've got the safety envelope right, and if you're accountable for assuring you're always within your safety envelope under 7248, every type of fuel you put in the cask, you should know whether or not it's in that safety envelope. You shouldn't have to put it in the COC. So if Don's graded approach pilot's going to be successful, I would expect that the fuel qualification table not be in there. And if it is in there, well, we'll just have to work harder on defining margin, won't we? Because we won't have succeeded yet. But hopefully we'll get there. We'll be able to focus on the areas most important. This is really important in decommissioning. We've got a lot of plants going into decommissioning. They're going to want to get the fuel out of the pools as fast as possible. That benefits everybody. If I'm near a decommissioned plant, if I'm working there, I want that stuff in dry casks as fast as I can get it there. But if I'm waiting for amendments that aren't necessary, the decommissionings are going to slow down. Trust fund resources are going to get eaten up. Okay, so, you know, there's a lot of important reasons to do this. Consolidated storage, aging management, and it has an effect at the repository. My shot clock is about to expire, and I'm still dribbling around the perimeter. Yes, it's March. That's what I'm thinking about. Go Cincinnati Bearcats. So I'll just throw it to an open slide here and hope we make the shot. If you want to engage in this discussion, I would tell you that this is a significant opportunity. I think Bob's team will have had several more weekly phone calls and have a chance to further define this white paper. We're going to have a lot of the industry here to talk about this topic, and so please come to our conference. We're going to frame a lot of discussions around the graded approach. It's important to us. It's the intersection of the number one and number three challenges this agency faces. So I'll conclude at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Rod. Our final speaker is Mr. Chris Regan. Chris currently serves as the Deputy Division Director of the Division of Spent Fuel Management, NMSS. Chris joined the NRC in 1991 as a nuclear reactor safety intern in the Office of Nuclear Reactor Regulation, or NRR. Since that time, he has served in a number of positions, including Inspector in Region 4, based primarily at the San Onofre Nuclear Power Plant, Technical Reviewer and Senior Project Manager in both NRR and the Office of Nuclear Material Safety and Safeguards, Enforcement Specialist, Office of Enforcement, and Executive Technical Assistant to the EDO. Since 2007, he has held progressively responsible leadership positions as Chief in NRR and NMSS. Chris served as the Deputy Director of Division of Engineering, Office of Nuclear Regulatory Research prior to his current position. Before joining the NRC, Chris was employed as a testing engineer at the Department of Defense U.S. Combat Systems Test Activity at the Aberdeen Proving Grounds in Maryland. Chris received a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering and a master's degree in engineering management from the University of Maryland. He is a graduate of the NRC's SES CDP program. Welcome, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present to you this morning. It's good to hear from my colleagues their perspectives on the graded approach. And thank you, Travis, for the introduction. I did want to make one minor correction to what Travis mentioned. I was actually an inspector in the NRC's Region 5 office in California, not Region 4. So that kind of dates when we started, if any of you recall, that we actually did have a Region 5 office in California. I also would like to mention and reinforce the fact that, you know, one of the things early on in my career, I actually found my technical review legs in NMSS as a technical reviewer doing thermal and containment reviews for spent fuel storage casks early on. So some of those first certificate of compliance applications landed on my desk from vendors like Holtec and TN and NAC. So for me, this is kind of like a homecoming, coming back to my roots of what I originally started with. So I'm excited to be back, for those of you who know me. All right. To begin, purpose of my presentation is to provide NRC's perspective of the graded approach project and the agency's next steps to apply the lessons learned in the consideration of future activities to risk-inform spent fuel storage. We characterize the graded approach to mean the process to apply risk insights and staff expert knowledge. And as mentioned before, earlier, we have decades of experience under our belt in the licensing of spent fuel storage designs, a considerable amount, I heard a number of 3,000-plus casks in the U.S. domestically. That's not even including what international experience we also have. We need to use this information and experience to streamline our certificate of compliance and technical specifications to basically make for a more efficient licensing review process. In essence, it's an approach that is consistent with recent communication from our former NMSS Office Director, Mark DePauw, to staff, which was titled Key Principles for Nuclear Materials Safety and Safeguard Reviews. Now, we commonly refer to this as our Reasonable Assurance of Adequate Protection Memo. Some of you have been exposed to that because we did make that publicly available. And it's already been mentioned to us in light of several of our REIs that have been submitted to provided to applicants. But it is something very important to us and something that we are focusing on and trying to better incorporate into our routine business and basically our culture, our way of thinking. The graded approach also has the effect of enabling increased flexibility for certificate of compliance holders and licensees to implement changes without the need for prior NRC approval, which Rod indicated is one aspect of reducing regulatory burden. It does come with some accountability as well, but that option is within our regulatory framework to allow licensees to make changes without the need for NRC prior approval. I'll briefly revisit the background for the graded approach, including a discussion of the goals, lessons learned, and a summary of the pilot review. And given you've heard from my colleagues some perspectives on a number of areas of focus and some targeted issues, I'll try not to be too repetitive, although I think you're probably hearing a theme with throughout our four presentations. I do want to mention, and I apologize to Rod because it is the first time I've seen it, the line drawing of used fuel performance margins did make me smile for all its simplicity, but I think it is a fairly good representation of some of the challenges that we do see. And I'll also touch on our vision for actions as we plan to take based on the Greater Approach Initiative as we move forward. All right, background. Both the NRC and industry recognize there's the need to improve the efficiency of our licensing process. We can always strive to do better, I think, is the key message. Obviously, this is under Part 72, but lessons learned in our area of responsibility when it comes to spent fuel management issues could be applied generically to many other aspects as well. Our experiences revealed when we looked into this that the level of detail in the certificate of compliance and the technical specifications grew significantly over time. And I can attest to that personally. When some of those early COCs that I saw in my technical review career were very short. Some of them that I've seen more recently are quite lengthy. So over time, they have grown significantly in volume and content. We heard from previous presentation observations, again, about too much information in the COC, extra information that detracts from what's most important, and subjectivity that introduces challenges, et cetera. Currently, the licensing process continues to consume an inordinate amount of both NRC and industry resources. This is extremely critical in a time where we are very conscious of resources, both financial and people. We had an opportunity to do better. So innovation and better risk informing our process was and is the name of the game, so spent fuel storage was ripe for a refresh. So in October 2016, agreement was established to follow NEI's regulatory issue resolution protocol, which you heard in an earlier presentation, to move forward in identifying, evaluating, and implementing changes. The regulatory issue resolution protocol provides a process and a framework for collaboration between the NRC and industry on issues such as this, that is, development of a more risk-appropriate dry storage licenses and COCs, the graded approach. So we had several public meetings with industry, resulted in alignment on the areas we were going to look at to evaluate. That includes both risk information and expert knowledge to improve the licensing process. And then finally, as part of the process, Loreno agreed to submit a pilot certificate of compliance project for review by the NRC using the proposed new review criteria. And this application submitted as Amendment 16 is currently under final stages of the review process. Goals. all right, so we embarked on this process and this program. What is it we were really after? What is it we really needed to achieve? Efficiency, schedules, resources. I think that goes without saying. This is the basic management of what we do. More risk-informed, from our perspective, consistency with the NRC's regulatory framework and vision. Our whole regulatory infrastructure across the board is intended, and we are targeting to be more risk-informed in how we go about our business. And then fundamentally reduce numbers. When we look at moving information from a certificate of compliance to a final safety analysis, a report, for example, giving a licensee better opportunity and ownership to make changes without the need for NRC review reduces the burden on the NRC and also makes it more efficient for licensees to take ownership without having to go through a licensing process. So it reduces the number of amendments that we would see. Having worked through portions of the regulatory issues resolution protocol, the pilot is our test, applying the graded approach methodology process to eliminate certain information in the certificate of compliance and the technical specifications. The process should result in removing, rewording, and relocating requirements to the final safety analysis report where, as I mentioned, non-safety significant changes can be processed more efficiently. As in the use of the 7248 process, I apologize for using numbers. This is just one of those acronyms that we use, 7248. It's familiar vernacular to most of us, not all of us. But this process allows the evaluation of changes for implementation without the need to submit an amendment request to the NRC if the change has negligible safety significance. The non-safety significant change would be subject to regulatory review within the inspection process instead of the more lengthy licensing process. And this is a good point to make because, in a sense, we're not changing what we have regulatory oversight of. We are just moving it from one area, licensing, to another area, inspection. So there is still maintaining the same degree of oversight as a regulatory body as we normally would. Overall, as expected, the effort would significantly reduce the number of future changes requiring approval through the license amendment process, thus improving regulatory efficiency. All right, so lessons learned. What did we learn through this process? During the pilot review, staff found significant changes to the certificates of compliance and technical specifications had occurred in prior amendments to incorporate new designs or design changes, complex loading schemes into the storage system. These changes complicated the staff's ability to understand the basis behind amendment applications and applying the evaluation criteria in the graded approach. So simplicity was one key aspect. Things became very complex over time. The request to relocate the fuel qualification tables to the technical, from the technical specifications to the final safety analysis report remains as an outstanding item to be resolved, but it's important because if one aspect, and just from my high-level look at some of the COCs and tech specs, the fuel qualification tables are incredibly detailed and add a lot of volume to that material. And it illustrates how complex some of the information in the COCs has become. So the issue of defining fuel content parameters most important to safety to determine the appropriate level of regulatory control while allowing the greatest flexibility for changes outside the licensing process has been more technically challenging than originally planned to be evaluated under the pilot process, but it is something that we should seek to accomplish. In summary, from the pilot review, you see a couple examples here of where I see success. Information generally agreed can be removed from the certificate of compliance altogether, and the types of information that can be relocated from the COC to the SAR. I heard numbers of 98 out of 99 criteria had been dispositioned, most of which there was unanimity and agreement on what the path forward would be. Some further work, perhaps, as we continue to go down this road on areas we can continue to refine to get to a place where we are much more in alignment. But if I look at just basic numbers, this is a pretty good success to get through some of this information and get it in a better place. Next steps. An outstanding item, obviously, is the fuel qualification tables. We are continuing to work on those. Travis has been put that at the top of his to-do list to try and get those resolved and move forward, but we are nearing a point where those will be wrapped up as well. We expect to finalize the contents definition requirements for the certificate of compliance in the spring of 2019. I don't want to go too much out on a limb, but I did hear, you know, April. Hopefully we can meet that date. Our intent is alignment on the goal to relocate extensive information currently in the COC on the fuel qualification tables to the FSAR. We agreed, staff is engaged with NEI regarding development of guidance document. I think you heard reference to that. Would be reviewed and potentially endorsed by the staff based on the final graded approach. And this would allow for us to implement risk insights into dry storage activities while the NRC updates review guidance documents, such as new Reg 1745 and new Reg 2215, which are in process. Ongoing activities. So we've been recharged to implement risk insights into our activities. We've engaged with the Office of Nuclear Regulatory Research regarding development of risk tools for dry storage. We are also piloting a process to apply this philosophy in the conduct of 10 CFR 7248 inspections, which I alluded to earlier. This process involving risk insights in the evaluation of 7248 summary reports to determine which areas we want to focus our inspection efforts. Coming full circle, I want to note it's imperative that we seek, identify, and implement means to be more efficient and effective regulators. Applying a graded approach is an example, but should be just the starting point. This is a journey. We've just kind of scratched the surface on what we can do when we're applying risk insights. Implementing and practicing risk-informed decision-making, noting that I'm competing with another session on risk-informed decision-making by Commissioner Andy Caputo next door. Applying the principles of reasonable assurance of adequate protection in the course of our technical review, and leveraging our extensive knowledge and experience in what is essentially a mature spent fuel storage industry needs to be a hallmark of how we operate in the future as a regulator. And I need to add, in this sense, we will need to rely more and more on industry collectively lead and champion efforts to identify and resolve issues generically on behalf of your industry wherever possible, noting greater use of topical reports as a method to document resolution to common shared issues as an option. I would add on a closing note and a more lighter note, something that occurred to me in the interest of anecdotal things. There was a quote from one of my favorite movies between two characters, and it went something like this. The chance of success of navigating an asteroid field is 3,720 to 1, and the answer was, never tell me the odds. Well, we don't want to be in that space, even though that was a risk-informed decision-making activity. It is something that we should reflect on because we incorporate risk in many of the things we do. We just need to make sure we're aware that we're actually doing it and use it to the greatest extent possible. With that, thank you very much, and I'll turn it back over to Travis.
Thank you, Chris. We'll now transition over to the Q&A portion of the session, and thank the panelists. We're right on schedule, so I appreciate that. I don't see anyone. Again, you're welcome to step up to the mic if you have a question. If I have cards as well. But Tim, if you want
yes, to. Yes, Tim McCartan, NRC staff. And I have both, a caution and an encouragement regarding risk-informed. And I have to say, Rod, when I hear that 10 to the minus 12, 10 to the minus 14 risk number, I cringe. I don't know what that number means. And by that, I'm saying, okay, the risks may be low. That's interesting. But every time we've done risk analyses in the high-level waste program, it wasn't so much the final number that informed us, but understanding how you got that final number. And that's what I would encourage people. Don't look at the final number. 10 minus 12, 10 minus 14. Maybe we should just put it in a cardboard box in an open field and we're good. And I know you're not suggesting that. But why is it so low? And that's the part of the understanding of what aspects of dry cask storage systems make it that low. And if there's a common understanding between the regulator, the stakeholders, the applicants, the licensees, as to what is the reason this remains safe today, then I think you can get to regulatory changes potentially as to what are the right things to look at. But the emphasis should be on why is it so safe? And that, at least that's my encouragement to people to talk more to that, because I think 10 minus 12, 10 minus 14, I'm not sure anyone can defend that number. You can calculate it, but the uncertainties in a number that low are truly very, very large.
Yeah, I agree 100%, Tim. You know, it is about why, you know, that's why I'm not recommending more PRAs. I think those are cringeworthy numbers, because I would summarize those numbers with one word, duh. You know, we knew the risks of dry storage were low. And the reason we know they're low is because there's a lot of designed-in safety here. Now, that all translates into safety margin. And that's why the encouragement you just gave, I sure hope you're participating on the NRC side of this dialogue about the defining the margin, because we do have to understand why it's safe, and the why it's safe can be found in the understanding of the performance margin. So that's what we're hoping to accomplish here. So I thank you for that, Tim.
May I add to that? John Kessler, formerly from EPRI. Tim, the report wasn't one line that had the number in it. It was a long report. NRC Research did another report where we broke it down, tried to identify. Maybe we came up with numbers, but the point is there's a lot of insight in there about all the different parts of dry storage process that contributed to those low numbers. So there is a lot of insight. You want to focus on a final number, fine, but the point is there is a lot of detail in there.
Thank you. I've got a question for Stefan. So the question is, how do you maximize safety by the graded approach?
What? Can you repeat that?
What? How do you maximize safety by the graded approach?
Well, from the graded approach, you maximize safety by focusing within the given resources on the things that are most important. So the things that have a larger safety margin, that is less likely to result in any challenge to the to get closer to your red line, they are not that important to be investigated so deeply than the ones that are closer to the red line. So in that respect, I believe that you maximize under the given situation that you maximize the safety. Of course, you can never really maximize the safety. Let me say optimize the safety, but under the, so.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's recognized that all of this extraneous information is causing it not to be maximized, and so we need to find that balance and that right level.
Ditto.
Right, seeing no one at the mics. The next question is directed to Rod at NEI, but they also list Don and Stefan, so I'll give you each a chance to answer if you desire. And the question is, if the industry submits a topical report, what would be the priority of the review in comparison with the licensing and certification actions under review at the time that NEI submits the topical?
I think that is what I call the too busy sharp cutting down trees to sharpen my saw dilemma. You know, we are, you know, we need amendments to be processed in a timely manner. So obviously NRC's licensing casework has to take priority. But NRC is processing way too many amendments because our COCs are way too detailed. There's too much stuff in there that we need to declutter that's not important to safety. So that's what we hope to do with this roadmap, is help reach agreement on how we can prioritize the saw sharpening activities without, you know, the end goal is if we prioritize some of these topicals, and we are going to have to look at which ones give us the biggest bang for our buck. You know, if we prioritize some of these topicals and other things, and if we make them as straightforward as possible, then all of a sudden, you know, the licensing caseload becomes more manageable because you have a sharp saw out there. So that's a lot. I expect that's the dialogue we'll have in discussing this NEI white paper is, yeah, how do we prioritize those activities to get them in there to make a difference?
Yep. I mean, it's the same. I mean, we need to have some kind of a balance. The topical reports or the other activities, they give us, we expect that there will be an advantage in the little bit longer run. So license amendments that are important for us on a almost day-by-day basis or on a short-term basis, they are important. But at the same time, we need to work on something that helps us a little bit further in the future. So in the end, we need to look at both of them in parallel.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question, because before we would go to all that trouble to develop a topical on the industry side, we'd want to hear from NRC as to how they would handle that, because other than the loss of full core offload ability, my understanding of the prioritization is that everything else is pretty much in one bin. So there'd need to be some important interaction with NRC regarding that.
Yeah, if I could just have one comment to that. As I mentioned in my presentation, one of the key aspects of this is that when bringing forth to the NRC a topical report for resolution of an issue of shared interests, it's important that there's unanimity in, okay, well, we need this approved, therefore where we place it in the prioritization and how we allocate resources to that particular review, industries on board that we all agree this is the most important for us to do. Because if we have one outlier who says, well, I have X amendments that are more important than that, well, then that kind of derails the whole point of having a topical report review done as a higher priority item. So it's important that we hear from industry that there is uniformity in making topical report reviews on any particular issue of priority.
Chris, while you got the mic, the next question is for you. It says, COCs have ballooned in size, partly because of NRC having a zero-risk approach. What is NMSS doing to implement a more consequent-based, risk-informed approach?
So I'll start by saying, you know, that the reasonable assurance of adequate protection memo from our former office director kind of put a marker in the sand to remind us of how we should conduct our technical reviews. As engineers, I think, you know, we tend to want to be very deterministic and speak in terms of absolutes. But when it comes to when is enough enough, we need to check ourselves and make sure that we are applying those principles of reasonable assurance of adequate protection. I think it's evidenced by looking at this particular effort with the content of the COC that we drifted away from applying that concept and that philosophy, and now we're bringing ourselves back to that. We are looking also at not just ourselves within NMSS and within the Division of Spent Fuel Management applying those principles. Are we doing this consistent with what the rest of the NRC is doing? The Office of Nuclear Reactor Regulation has been leading the charge on risk-informing decision-making, technical reviews, inspection activities for a while. So we do have a good role model on how we can implement this kind of philosophy. So it's a journey. We are moving in the right direction, but we do have opportunity to do more. And that memo from our former office director was kind of a catalyst for how we are moving forward.
The next question is for Don. And the question goes towards your opinion on the evaluation criteria that we used in the pilot for the graded approach. And the question is, in your opinion, do you think that methodology should be reused? Please provide some thoughts based on lessons learned from the pilot.
Well, I certainly think we'll want to review it in the aftermath of the actual official final results for Amendment 16, the pilot. The workshops that we had were four, as I recall. They were at least 2 hours. They were very well led. They involved a lot of energy and a lot of discussion. We had brought example tech specs and our thoughts from industry on what should happen, and there was a lot of debate. And we tried to use that interaction to make the selection criteria as black and white as we could, and they felt right. It felt right to proceed with the pilot, but in carrying out the pilot, it was tough, and so I think some of the results reflect that. So I think it was very valuable time spent and interaction, but I think we can improve on that, and I look forward to being a part of that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, those got us a step forward, but not a big enough step, and so we need to take the next steps now.
Yeah, I'll just add my perspective in on that. I also thought that, you know, the process of coming up with the evaluation criteria, I thought that did go very well. I think the pilot focused on, in many aspects, some of the low-hanging fruit of information that could be moved. But I think as you apply the criteria and into more detailed technical issues, we'll probably have to, you know, I think it's a great start, but I think there'll probably be opportunity to refine the evaluation criteria to help with reviews. But that's just my thoughts to add to that. So the next question is open to any other panelists. Would a new ISG document be an acceptable approach, or would that be a useful approach in your perspective?
In general, I would say no. I mean, if ISG is where we want to put the information, we're looking at trying to stabilize the regulatory framework, and you know, moving away from ISGs as a regulatory tool is a good thing, because they've evolved through 22, 23, 24 ISGs, some of which have multiple revs, and that's not a stable regulatory framework. I think that's why we're proposing a white paper, and then you set the precedents. We're setting one precedent through Don COC. I know Holtec has an approach you're talking about, too. So the topicals establish something that is not only a precedent, but it's one you can incorporate by reference. So I don't want to do it on the regulatory framework side. I want to keep, you know, that stable.
Yeah. Let me say, I mean, it depends on what the ISG, what the purpose of the ISG is. I mean, if it's just a step in the right direction, it shouldn't be the replacement for anything else. But if it's just a step to document some intermediate agreement that has been reached and formalize that, there might be a benefit to it. But there's always the danger that it then stops after the ISG and it stays there. But if it's just a temporary step, there might be a benefit to it.
Yeah, and I'll add to that, you know, focus on the word, you know, interim. You know, ISG is interim guidance. As originally formulated when some of the first ISGs were developed, they were merely a means to document an interim staff guidance until such a time when the standard review plan was next revised, and that the intent of that is the SRP would be revised on a systematic, periodic basis. For one reason or another, the time frame between SRP revisions took a lot longer than I think originally planned, which is why we ended up with 20-somewhat plus pieces of interim staff guidance. And I would agree that doesn't exactly provide for the most stable of regulatory framework. But would an ISG be beneficial? Well, it depends. If it's just a means to document guidance, and guidance is, as just mentioned, it's guidance. It would be one way to satisfy regulatory requirements, not the only way. But if it's a tool to document at that time guidance that could be useful to staff and industry until such a time when the SRP was next revised, it may be a good thing to do. But, you know, it's an easy out, but I guess my answer would be it depends.
Yeah, we've mentioned a few avenues for specific vehicles to identify and come to agreement and put certain items to bed that either need to stay in the CFC and tech specs or do not. And ISG is a possible mechanism for that. But I think there are multiples. ISGs are useful, in my opinion, so it's possible.
And I'll just add to that, with our effort to consolidate guidance with the SRP update, one of the things we tried to structure the SRP to make it easier to do updates. So though we will retain as a tool a use of ISGs, that would not be our, I would say, probably not our preferred method. We would prefer to use the new structure of the SRP to update the guidance. But as everyone has said, we do have that ISG tool that if the situation was right, we could use ISG as an interim guidance. So we're still good on time. Our next question is to Rod McCullough. It says, how does the white paper define safety margin given there are safety limits such as K effective of 0.95 and peak clad temperature limits already established?
Well, yes, and, you know, some of those limits, first of all, the white paper doesn't establish the safety limits. The white paper is the roadmap by which we will enhance our understanding of the safety limits. Some of those safety limits were established arbitrarily, 400 degrees C for the thermal limit. Where does that come from? Well, NRC views it as a cliff edge right now. Is it a cliff edge? Well, the high burn-up demo says it's not. But okay, so let's define that margin. I don't want to arbitrarily walk away, even if it was an arbitrarily established limit. The limits have served us well. So that's why we need a roadmap. We need a process for how we do that. And again, that's what Chairman Savinicki said. It's more in the how. And Commissioner Wright also, you know, I understand anything when you talk about it in baseball language. And so he talked a little bit about the plate has always been 17 inches wide. The plate 17 inches wide before we start this, and it will be 17 inches wide. But we'll know how far outside that next pitch is. So, you know, that Stefan and Don aren't standing in the box here thinking, well, I know it's way off the plate, but do I have to swing at it, you know? I would not attack limits in the NEI white paper, but I think, you know, the topicals and the tools we'll put in place in accordance with that roadmap, the PERTs, will give us a better understanding of those limits. We'll know where the margin is. We'll know if the ball's on the plate or off the plate, which to me means we will know whether or not something really challenges the margin or it doesn't challenge the margin. That gets to what Tim said at the beginning. If it doesn't challenge the margin, we shouldn't be putting our resources against it.
So the next question is related to the status of the FQT decision for inclusion in COCs. And I guess I should probably take that question.
Please.
So the status, I think overall we're coming to a point where we're ready to move forward. One of the challenging things that we had in looking at the FQT issues, I think we all aligned and agreed that that's way too much information that needed to be in the COCs. And so we were trying to define exactly what are those parameters that are important in enveloping the contents of what you're going to be loading. And at the same time, we were reviewing a couple of licensing actions with different licensing bases, and we wanted to be consistent as we apply this. And so, you know, it did create additional challenge looking at the licensing bases of the various, the different actions that were before us to be consistent with this. But I think we issued some recent RAIs on those licensing actions that point towards where we're going with defining the parameters and the contents that we feel that are important that will allow us to step forward now where we're going with the FQT. So right now we're tracking to, you know, get a position in this spring. And my boss sitting here at the table and at the back is reminding me of that constantly. So I think we are at a place now that we've moved forward on those licensing actions that we can also make some more progress and come to a decision on the FQTs. So I think you'll see that in the next couple of months. The second part of the question is what impasse, what issues remain at impasse, and it's really just making sure we are in a good position, again, just defining what are those parameters that were important to the shielding aspects while giving the greatest flexibility. We are aligned that there should be greater flexibility in what the applicants are able to change outside of the amendment process. But it's so, you know, using baseball terms, it's finding that sweet spot that's appropriate and still meets the regulations. And so we did dig up an old reference document, New Reg 6716, I think is what it is, where there was a study done that actually had taken a look at this. And so we pulled that document out and looked at the specifics of that study and trying to better understand how can we move forward with using more risk insights into this process. So I don't know if anyone else had to want to
add. Well, I just want to say, you know, I'm a computer science major, which is why I generally don't put my educational stuff on my profile. But I sat and witnessed our subject matter expert on fuel qualification and one of NRC's multiples, and it's a complex arrangement of all these parameters and how they play together. So I agree, it's not easy to identify exactly what is very safety significant and what is not based on that observation of that conversation. So I can understand it's taking time.
And I think we are out of time, and I've gotten through most of the question cards. So if you did have follow-up questions, you can grab the panelists here. I think they'll probably hang around here for a few minutes, or you can also reach out to the panelists by email. So thank you for your participation in this session.